folks. Galen Clavio here. Welcome back to the Bracket Racket as we start our weekly conversation on college basketball. A lot to talk about. A lot of things have been going on across the country, and happy to have a chance to chat about those things with you. Let's go ahead and introduce you to our panel. First off, joining us from the Deep South, Kyle Lamb. Kyle, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Galen. I don't know if I'm qualified to be on this week because, to be honest, I kind of took a sabbatical from watching college basketball this week, and I was focusing on the more important things in life, like One Direction's Liam Payne and his Twitter outrage against the national media. It kind of made me jealous because I wish we had somebody doing this to the college basketball media, but Liam Payne's, his outrage was admirable, but just misplaced.
Yeah, well,
I occasionally take sabbaticals as well. I do them in July.
Yeah, that's, well, you know, there's times to do these things. I think it's interesting that as David Griggs joins us, David, you're not on sabbatical. In fact, you've been pretty been pumping up the podcast here lately. Earlier this week. How's it going?
Pretty good. I am the best analyst in the game. Don't talk about me.
Okay. Yes. You can catch David on the Hoops HD Twitter feed as well, as he's there on a pretty regular basis. Anyway, Kyle, we'll try to pick around your observations from the week, but let's go ahead and dive in and talk about some of these games that we had so far, and you know, really. Starting back on Wednesday, which I think is probably a good place to begin, we're starting to see teams fall away from where they need to be bubble-wise. And there's some teams that I think we should just focus on immediately and get started here, like teams that are just going entirely the wrong direction. And we knew this would happen. This happens at the beginning of every conference season where you just get teams that, frankly, don't measure up, and we kind of thought they might not measure up, and then most of the doubt has been removed. Let's start off with the Illinois Fighting Illini, Kyle. Illinois, they have a home game against Purdue, not the most robust of road teams, historically speaking, at least here recently, and yet Purdue's able to get it done. They go in, they beat Illinois 66-58. Now, this was an Illinois team that at one time, you know, it was 13-2. They had a win against Missouri. They played well against Oregon. And you thought to yourself, you know, John Gross is doing a heck of a job so far. They've lost four in a row, including Northwestern and Purdue. They got obliterated by Michigan State. They got some problems right now.
Yeah, what is it with all these Big Ten teams? Not only do they not measure up, you can throw the tape measure away on a couple of these teams. This Illinois team, I don't know that I ever bought into them completely, even when they beat Missouri. I think, you know, our analysts here on Hoops HD are naturally skeptical about Missouri all the time. Not Missouri specifically, but a Frank Haith-coached Missouri team.
Yeah.
And we're naturally skeptical, and it's healthy to be that way. And so I don't know that I ever bought into Illinois fully, but I have to admit, I didn't see this coming. And losing at home... Losing to Purdue is not that bad, but losing at home to Purdue, you can't do that if you won an NCAA tournament bid. You especially can't lose to Northwestern, Indiana.
Yeah.
It was a really, really crushing loss to Illinois. And what's worse is out of all of the remaining regularly scheduled games left the rest of the season, according to KenPom's predictions right now, they're only favored in two games, so it's not going to get any easier for Illinois.
It's actually, now they're only favored in one. They're favored in the Nebraska game, and the other one that they were favored in, I guess maybe it was the Penn State game on the road. They're no longer favored in that one either. So it's, this could go downhill fast. This Illinois offense is just not there. This is sub median. Offense from Illinois. And I think we knew that Gross was trying to keep this team together with with duct tape and smoke and mirrors.
Staples.
I mean, and not even particularly nice staples. I mean, they weren't constructed well, and we knew that was going to happen. There's a lot of young players on this team. But from where they were 2 weeks ago to where they're at now, just not in great shape at all. David, another team that falls into that category is Georgetown. You know, here's a Georgetown team that, again, you go back to January 4th, they win against St. John's. They're 10-3. They're 2-0. You know, their losses up to that point, they had one bad loss to Northeastern, but they, you know, they lost to Kansas. They lost to Oregon. They've had that nice win against VCU. They had an increasingly nice-looking win against Kansas State. Now they've dropped three of their last four, including a home game to Seton Hall yesterday.
Yeah, that's and
that's just not good. Wow. Yeah.
No, I think that, like, again, they're going in the complete wrong direction. I don't know if they're only favored in one more game the rest of the year. I think they'll do a little bit better than that. But it's easy to kind of forgive a lot of this. Losing at Kansas is certainly forgivable. Oregon on a neutral floor, albeit Oregon's about to lose to Oregon State right now, which I think the Surgeon General advises against that.
Yes,
but, you know, losing at Xavier, I ended up, I don't know if you've done a seed list yet, Xavier ended up on my 7 line, surprisingly. Now, they're unproven on the road, but Xavier, it's hard to win at Xavier, so that one's kind of forgivable. Providence is kind of a snake pit. They just blew out Creighton. And then you get into the next two, it's just, you're really, really holding your nose, and although those games are individually forgivable, when you add them all together, it starts to look pretty bad. I mean, they have a loss to Northeastern, and at the time I just thought Northeastern was a tough team. Northeastern still only has 5 wins on the year, I think.
Right. Come on,
and Seton Hall Griggs, is really bad.
Griggs, you can't leave out St. John's. They have all that talent.
They have a tremendous amount of talent. It's
talented at what?
Well, they're talented at being talented, I think, what it comes down to. But, you know, we we're not necessarily trying to pick on any individual teams, but I do think it's important that we point out, you know, some of these teams that a lot of people...
I think we need to pick on Missouri. I mean, they deserve to be ridiculed.
But here's the thing. Missouri, while they lost to Vanderbilt, well, I think it was, they really didn't do anything leading up to that to make you think that they necessarily belong. You know, I mean, it's one of those deals where I've been very unimpressed with what I've seen out of Missouri anyway, and I don't have...
You weren't impressed by that road win at Auburn?
Well, you know, my point is, there's a difference, I think, between the teams that were performing okay and then started underperforming, and then there's the teams that are just completely falling off the map. And you know, I mean, Missouri... To me, I mean, they're way off the pace. I mean, they're going to struggle. At this point, they've got one win against an NCAA caliber opponent, and that's really it. And that game was at home. Another team I wanted to talk about that's fallen off the radar a bit, Kyle, and this was predictable given what happened to them injury-wise, but Colorado. Colorado was still the last team in my field in the bracket that I did today. But, you know, they lost to Washington. They lost at home to UCLA. They just don't look like the same team now with the injury situation to Dinwiddie. And, you know, you really have to worry about what's going to happen with this Colorado team down the stretch now.
Well, and to be fair, we were already worried about Colorado even before the Dinwiddie injury because they had not done anything away from home thus far. And when Dinwiddie went down, I mean, that was a crushing blow. I don't even know if they're going to be able to – I don't know if they've got enough juice to even win these games at home the rest of the year, let alone going away from home and plucking off, you know, a top 25, top 50 type of team. So they're really in trouble. I mean, even the Washington State game before he got hurt, they really, really looked very poor out there. And so I think this is a team that they're going to have a hard time making the tournament if this is any indication.
Well, they're kind of in a position where they have to. They can't just tread water. Like they have to win games against good teams remaining on their schedule. We're going to get a big taste of this week, you know, since they have to travel to Arizona and Arizona State in back-to-back games, and then they have Utah at home. Like that's three potential tournament teams. I've only got one of them in my field right now, but
yeah, I think only one of them gets in. I am.
You feel
not
dirty
big on Arizona.
That about Utah, a potential NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, if you look at Utah right now, and I want to let David talk, but you look at Utah right now and what they've done, I got them. They've got two wins against teams that I currently have in my field, BYU and UCLA. They, You know, they're 3-3 in the conference. They're just there on the fringes. I mean, they're not.
Well, I'm not saying you're wrong for including them as a possible tournament team. I'm just wondering if you felt dirty including them because
they're 0-3 in road neutral games. Of course, I feel dirty about it. But
that's good. I just want to make sure you have a conscience about it.
Have you looked at the field, Kyle? There's not much down there at this point.
No, yeah, I prefer to stay away from. Well, never mind.
Yeah. Go ahead, David.
Well, that's just the thing. I mean, when I was putting my seed list together, I was looking at it, and I'm like, really? This team? I mean, I had Tennessee in. Texas was my first team out. Texas. I mean, there just isn't really.
I have Texas safely in my field at this point.
You have them safely in? Wow.
I have them safely in the field, yes.
Okay, but yeah, I have been underwhelmed with Utah, with the exception of that BYU game where they were just jacked to the roof and everything was clicking. That was really the only time they really impressed me because their out-of-conference schedule was pathetic. Yeah. I mean, they have, I think, more wins against sub-250 teams than they do top-250 teams right now.
Right.
I feel like we owe it to our viewers to explain when Galen says Texas is safely in this field, he's qualifying that without saying so, that this is a reminder that Rick Barnes is still the coach and February is still coming up.
I see it as if today is the day. You know, okay. I'm not projecting forward. So, yes, absolutely. But look, I would say, let's just talk about Texas because I like a good debate. Right now, I have, like, these are the teams that I had in as at-larges that I thought were worse right now than Texas. Okay. And this is in order. Baylor, Kansas State, Virginia Commonwealth, George Washington, UCLA, Clemson, Louisiana Tech, Arkansas, SMU, BYU, and Colorado.
Okay. I really like GW. I like them a lot.
I like GW, too, and I had them in. Again, I had them in safely. But I look at GW, and I look at Texas, and I say to myself, okay, Texas has a road win against North Carolina. They have a home win against Iowa State. They're 4-2 in road and neutral. Their strength of schedule is 41 overall. They've played well. They're 14-4 on the season. I think that they have no bad losses at all. You get down the list. I mean, you know, Baylor's best win on the season. I mean, Kentucky, that's a decent victory, obviously. But then beyond that, you're talking about Colorado and Dayton on a neutral floor. They're 2-4 in road and neutral games, and their schedule has been no tougher than Texas. George Washington, who you mentioned, they're kind of an odd team because on the one hand, they have good numbers as far as their wins are concerned, but then you look at the actual teams, the teams that they've beaten are Manhattan on the road, Miami, Creighton, Maryland, all on neutral courts, Virginia Commonwealth at home, and St. Bonaventure on the road. You've got, but that's two tournament teams total.
Nobody goes into Dratty Gymnasium and easily wins against Manhattan Jaspers. Nobody does that.
Just ask Manhattan. They have all kinds of trouble winning there.
That's right. Plus, I mean, you look at George Washington's overall strength of schedule. It's 131, and they've played well on the road, but no better than Texas at this point. And I think you get below those teams, you've either got, like, stupefyingly inconsistent teams like Arkansas, or you've got teams that simply haven't done much, like Clemson or Louisiana Tech or Arkansas or SMU. So,
I think they're real consistent. They're home court heroes. They'll take Florida to the wall at home. They'll beat Kentucky at home, and then they'll go on the road and lose to garbage.
Yeah,
I mean, they're pretty consistent in that regard.
That's fair, but I mean, they do have a neutral court win against Minnesota. So I mean, the narrative isn't complete there.
Well, that's true. I forgot about that one.
So, I think, you look at the teams, like, those are my teams that are in right now. And, I moved BYU back into the field, and I never thought I would do that again this season. But they've taken care of business, and, you know, they've got the 17th toughest schedule in the nation right now.
While we're on the subject, you brought this up. Maybe this is a good time to mention. Maybe you already have it planned for later. But can we talk about this Minnesota team real quick?
Yeah. Let's go ahead and do that. I think they're an interesting case. So Minnesota, of course, they lose today to Iowa. They're 14-5 overall. They're 3-3 in the Big Ten. They're 3-4 in road and neutral games. 26th toughest schedule in the nation. Their wins are interesting. I mean, they've beaten Florida State, Ohio State, and then they've got a game that they won at Richmond. They really haven't done anything to embarrass themselves, Kyle. I think they've played pretty well quality-wise overall, but what's your thought on this team?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking today when they went up 10, like late first half, I was thinking to myself, you know, this is going to be one of those games they're going to end up losing this. Because, you know, we all saw that Iowa run coming a mile away. But I was thinking to myself, they're going to end up losing this, but this team really just looks like a tournament team to me.
Yeah.
And I've watched about 6-7 games this year on television all the way through. And I got to say, you know, I mentioned this in our email discussion thread, but I think Rick Pitino has done just a fabulous job with this team because he's doing it without, you know, some new coaches come in and take over the program, and they want to fit that square peg in a round hole, and they want to implement their style. You know, it doesn't matter if they have the personnel to do it. They want to put their style and their stamp on. And Pitino recognizes he doesn't have the guys to run up and down the floor and press all the time. And I love the way he's mixed and matched his defenses and offenses based on the opponent. I think he's doing a great job with this team. Yep. I don't know if they're going to get enough wins to get in easily, but I really think he's going to guide this team in the tournament. I'm really impressed with what he's doing there.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'll get in easily. I mean, at this point, just the three wins that they've got against good competition, you know, I think will be enough. You know, what'll be interesting is, you know, really, if you look at the rest of their schedule, they've only got about 5 games against competition that they absolutely should not lose to. You know, and the rest of the Big Ten games are going to be in that range where, you know, if they win or lose, I think the wins are going to help them. The losses aren't necessarily going to hurt them unless they lose to Northwestern or lose to Penn State.
Yeah.
And, you know, I echo your thoughts on – can we call him like Ricardo Pitino? Is that okay? Like I think Richard Pitino doesn't work, and Rick Pitino is obviously too confusing. So I'm going to call him Ricardo from this point forward. You all can follow along if you'd like. But no, I agree. I think they have that's been the coaching job of the year so far, I think, in the Big Ten. I think it's more impressive than what Beeline's doing, even though I think what Beeline's doing is also excellent right now at Michigan. But I think that given the uncertainty and given just the history of this Minnesota team, I mean, this has been the most schizophrenic team in the conference for the last 5 years, and it's why Tubby Smith is no longer there. And I think we're seeing there's a lot of underlying talent on this squad. They made a good hire. I mean, I think that I think he's far exceeded expectations. I think that what they do in the tournament is really going to be interesting. It's going to really be dependent on who they draw. But I think they'll give whoever they draw an interesting game. And you couldn't say that about Minnesota even last year, let alone, you know, the past 3 or 4 years.
You know, it's interesting because I was talking to David Griggs today by telephone. And, you know, for anybody that's never seen David Griggs use a telephone, he has to use a special speakerphone built for him.
It's kind of hard. I mean, fortunately, Kyle called me. I have a hard time dialing sometimes.
But you know, we were talking about this a little bit, and it's interesting because Minnesota fired their coach for the wrong reason. They hired this coach for the wrong reason, but it's going to end up probably working out for them.
Well, it's simple math, like a negative times a negative, and you get a positive.
I still don't think they fired Tubby Smith for the wrong reason. I'm the only person on that island, and I understand that. But I think that it was time for a change to be made with all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes there and off the court. I do think it's funny, though, because if you think about it, there were two coaching hires this past offseason that you could have scratched your head at. One of the hires, everybody celebrated, even on this podcast, and was like, hey, this is wonderful. The other one everybody laughed at. The one everybody laughed at is Richard Pitino. The one that everybody celebrated was Enfield at USC. And, you know, it's just funny. Granted, you know, Minnesota had a lot more latent talent on their team than USC did, but USC is really going to have to start from scratch with this. I still think that was a bad hire on their part. Anyway. Let's talk about another team that's kind of resurrected themselves a little bit here over the last couple of weeks, or at least the last week. And maybe resurrected is the wrong word, but I think they're in the same vein as this Minnesota team, and that's Oklahoma. And David, you know, this is an Oklahoma team that we were iffy about even making the tournament coming into the season, but they're 7-1 on the road. They played a very tough schedule. They've got road wins now at Texas and at Baylor on top of a home win versus Iowa State. I mean, this is a team that's looking like they could work their way up into the 7-8 seed range, possibly, maybe even higher than that.
Yeah, and the thing about them is, if you've watched them throughout the season, they're one of those teams that's better now than they were before. And yeah. And you almost have to, again, when you're talking about selecting and seeding them, you have to look at the entire body of work. You have to look at them holistically, as I like to say. But measuring how far that they can go or how good that they can be, they're better now and have more potential now than they did a month ago. This is a team that's really playing well. And you know, they looked really good against Iowa State. They went down to Baylor and won. It's not easy to win. They went to Texas and won. You know, they don't have much outside of that, but they did win, I guess, Texas A&M. That was sort of noteworthy. But, you know, this is a team that's looking good. What I'm looking at is showing that Texas A&M game on a neutral site. Is that a mistake on the profile I'm looking at?
I'm going to defer to Kyle on that. Kyle, any thoughts there?
I don't even remember that game. But I can actually, you know, I've got it right here because I'm looking at the box. Well,
Why would they play a conference game on a neutral site on December
10th? Well, it's not a conference game. Texas A&M is not a conference game.
That's right. Neither is Colorado.
That's... I'm glad that we've once again been tackled by the animal that is conference realignment. Good Lord.
They played that game in Houston, Texas.
Yes,
I'm not
they did.
Let's switch gears a little bit.
Can we delete that?
We cannot delete that. That's the
That's what we do here.
It's live video, dude. Sorry, you know the rules. So let's talk about Pitt. Kyle, Pitt is sixth in the Ken Pomeroy rankings.
You do this to taunt me. Every time Pitt comes up, you throw this at me just because you know I hate them.
I always like your responses on this. They're sixth in the Pomeroy rankings. They're third in the BPI. Yet they have two wins on the season that you could even remotely call decent. A neutral court win against Stanford and a road win against North Carolina State. They lost, of course, to Syracuse, and they gave Syracuse a pretty good game. But when I was trying to put my seed list together, I actually ended up with Pitt as a sixth seed, which I mean, I almost feel like I put them too high because I look at like Creighton and St. Louis and Oregon, maybe not Oregon now that they lost, but I look at some of the teams that I've got right below them, and I'm like, all these teams have far more impressive resumes. What do we do with Pitt? I mean, I'm worried that the committee's going to overseed them simply because they have a good record. They're not going to pick up a whole lot of quality wins in the ACC this year, but they've done nothing, and yet they are the Wisconsin of this year's power ranking profiles, where you know what they've actually accomplished on the court has no resemblance whatsoever to what they're being ranked at this stage.
You know, here's the thing: they're going to end up with 26 or 27 regular season wins, and probably not have a single top 50 win. And that's going to be remarkable for a major conference team like that because, I mean, they're in a situation where they're going to feast on the mediocre teams in the ACC, but when it comes down to it, I don't see them beating Duke, you know, coming up here in a couple weeks. I don't see them winning at North Carolina. You know, it's not to say can't win these games, but I don't see it happening. And they're going to be a tough team to seed for that reason.
I would have agreed with you, but what did you think of yesterday? I know they didn't win the game. I know they were pathetic in the final minute. I was amazed that they were even on the same planet as Syracuse. I thought it was going to be just an absolute, you know, teeth stomping of Pitt. And Pitt was right in there.
I mean, but they're always right in there. I think they just play Syracuse well. I mean, they've obviously got a lot of experience playing against Syracuse. But look, at the end of the day, they didn't win the game. It's kind of like the Cincinnati game with them. They were close. It was an ugly game, but they didn't win it.
Nobody won that game.
No, well, that's true. I understand they didn't win. I guess part of it was that I was expecting them to get beaten so badly that I was like, hey, maybe this is a top 20 team.
That's the thing, though. I think we make that mistake sometimes in college basketball where we look at the margin and we say to ourselves, oh, they were close to this team, therefore they must be that good. And I don't know that that's the case with this Pitt team. I think, you know, Kyle was mentioning this, they may end up going through the rest of the season without a top 50 caliber win. They have five games total that they can prove themselves in as far as that's concerned. They've got Duke at home, Virginia at home. Those games are back-to-back, actually. They've got Syracuse at home. They're at North Carolina, and they've got Florida State at home. That's really it. Like, I mean, the rest of their ACC schedule is filled with, you know, like home game against Clemson or road games against Boston College and Notre Dame, and they got Virginia Tech at home. I mean, I don't want to look at Pitt because we've done this time and time again with them. I think that the style they play lends itself to close margins of loss against good teams, and we saw that last year. Remember last year they went in to Louisville and they only lost by three. They only lost by three to Syracuse in the Big East tournament last year. They went to overtime at home against Marquette. I mean, this is a team that has a history of playing close games against top competition, and then they end up going to the tournament and losing by 20 to Wichita State.
I think we're agreeing. It's just that we had different starting points. On the most recent seed list that I did, which was Wednesday, I believe, I had them on my 9 line. I'm thinking now, after seeing them yesterday, that they are perhaps better than a 9 seed.
But that's the quandary here, though. This is where the committee members on the NCAA basketball committee get put to the test, because they say they're looking at the computer ratings. So let's say at the end of the year you've got a Pittsburgh team with one top 50 win, okay? What do you do with a team that's top 10 in efficiency rating, but has one top 10 or one top 50 win all season? I mean,
what do you do? You put them on the 9 line, which is where I put them, which is where they belong.
Maybe the 8 line. I might be willing to give them the 8 line. I mean, that's it. But that was the debate I was having, because I look at them and I say, you know, of all the teams in the top 25 or so of the power rankings, or the top 25 just in the polls, they are the least accomplished team in terms of what they've actually done, you know, and it's funny because it was them and Louisville were kind of neck and neck in that race, and frankly, I mean, Ohio State's in that race as well to a degree, but you know, Louisville went out, they beat SMU, they beat UConn on the road. You know, we've seen Ohio State play close games, and I think we've got more of a sample size historically with Ohio State that I feel more confident about seeding them closer to their power rating than necessarily what they've done in terms of wins and losses so far. But Pitt, even their strength of schedule. I mean, you look at what they've done strength of schedule-wise. It's 144th.
Yeah, and there's a difference between playing 80 to 100 type of teams and playing 200 to 250 or 200 to 300 type of teams, and that's what Pittsburgh has been feasting on. They've been feasting on just dismal competition.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
they have as many top 300 wins as Arizona. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love how you can skew numbers.
Elsewhere on the seed list, I want to bring this up, and actually we ended up taping a small separate podcast with Lee Delvecchio, who can't join us tonight, but we're going to append that to the end of this broadcast that you're listening to.
Excellent.
But let me ask you guys this, because we talked about a little bit. What are your thoughts on Wichita State in terms of where they should be seated or will be seated? I mean, right now, of course, they're undefeated. They're 19-0. They're 7-0 in road and neutral games. Their wins are decent. I mean, they won on a neutral court against BYU. They won at St. Louis. They beat Tennessee at home. They won at Alabama. Not the most accomplished of resumes compared to some of the other teams that are up there towards the top of the S-curve. But they are undefeated. If this team goes undefeated in the regular season and wins the Missouri Valley Tournament, do you think that they will be given a one seed? Do you think that they should be given a one seed? Let me start with David on this.
Being completely honest, and I just don't know. The answer is I don't have a damn clue. And I don't know how to categorically look at this and decide what the committee does with a team that's undefeated but that doesn't really have much in the way of the top 50. I mean, the win at St. Louis I think is really, really good. It might be the only home game St. Louis loses all year. You could make a case that they should be a 1 or that they will be a 1. It would not shock me if they gave them a 1. Here's the thing, though. This is turning back the clock 10 years. They gave St. Joseph's the number 1 seed, but that St. Joseph's team – was clearly a number one caliber seeded team. They had played a top 40 overall strength of schedule. They had a lot of good wins. If you looked at them on paper, they matched it. Last year, Gonzaga got a one seed. That Gonzaga team played a really strong out-of-conference schedule and, for the most part, played in a league that I think had more good teams in it than what the Missouri Valley does. You look at other cases. Again, this is turning the clock way back. I don't even remember the exact year, but it was the year Princeton went 29-1. That team only got a 5.
Right.
I don't know how. And then Gonzaga, one year when they were, I think, finished the season ranked 3rd or 4th nationally, they ended up with a 6 seed. I don't think that the Missouri Valley is anywhere close to being as weak as the Ivy was the year Princeton ran it, but the problem is still the same. If they go undefeated, how many tournament teams did they really beat? I mean St. Louis, and that's really it.
Right.
What do you do with them? I don't know. I have them on my 3 line. I don't think I'll get them any higher than that. If anything, I'll probably get them lower because the teams around them will eventually win more big games. But it would not shock me at all if the committee gave them a 1. It wouldn't shock me at all if the committee gave them a 5. I'm real curious to hear what Kyle has to say.
Kyle.
I feel like this is deja vu because this is Gonzaga all over again. And
do you think so, though? But Gonzaga had good wins last year.
Well, that's the thing. It's Gonzaga all over again, and they're not even as – they don't even have half the profile that Gonzaga had.
Right, yeah.
First of all, to answer the first question, will they get a number one? Absolutely. This is not even a question. They will be a number one seed. As to your second question – where do I begin? Where do I'm not even going to throw out euphemisms because I'm not going to pretend like I'm going to be polite about this. No effing way. They do not deserve. Listen, okay, Wichita State 2 years ago, last year, fine. I can understand by putting together a passy schedule. Okay, they can't control the Missouri Valley Conference schedule. I get it. But Wichita State is coming off a trip to a Final Four. And are you telling me Greg Marshall couldn't go out this past May and make changes to his schedule and put together something better than what they actually have? Are you telling me Utah State couldn't play? He couldn't get anybody on the schedule to play him? Okay, yes, it's going to happen because in the last 15 years, only one team in 15 years has been number one or number two in the AP poll going into conference tournaments and won the conference tournament and then not gotten a number one seed. It's going to happen. It's going to happen this time because they're going to run the table. Arizona or Syracuse will eventually lose, which means Wichita State is going to be number one in the AP poll at the end of the year because they haven't lost to their craptastic schedule, and they're going to be a one seed. But no, I'm sorry, if you go through an entire season and don't beat a top 50 team, you do not deserve a number one seed, period.
Well, I mean, they will, I mean, to be fair, they will have the St. Louis win on their resume, and they will have a Tennessee win on their resume, and I think that those two teams are top 50.
Okay, I forgot about them. But
that said, Kyle, I agree with your sentiment. I think, but here, look, I think this is what we need to prepare for. You know, the committee, they love patting themselves on the back by rewarding teams that have gaudy records in these sorts of situations. They just they can't help themselves. I mean, it's like catnip to them. And so I think that ultimately I'm more in line with what David's talking about. I think I had Wichita State as my last 2 seed in this most recent S-curve that I did. They'll probably drop below if Iowa wins another couple of games or if Florida wins a couple of good games. I had Iowa State ahead of Wichita State last time. I think it's going to be interesting watching the groundswell and watching people try to compare them to Gonzaga last year when, as you both point out, Gonzaga actually had a very good schedule last year. I think it was like the 30th or 35th toughest schedule in the nation, whereas Wichita State right now is the 143rd toughest schedule in the nation, and that's going to go down significantly the more Missouri Valley teams that they play.
Yeah, and just one thing, the sentiment, being the mid-major, under-the-radar guy, had Northern Illinois won the MAC championship in football, they would have loved a 5 seed. I mean, no one is saying Wichita does not get a chance to play for it. I just don't think they have done as much to earn a number one seed. I agree with Kyle. The more I think about it, they're probably going to get it. I do think they're going to struggle when they go to Indiana State. They might lose that game. I figured they would lose two games this year at Missouri State and at Indiana State. They managed to win at Missouri State, but I mean, if you go undefeated and you're only in 95% of your games are to teams outside the top 50, to me that's way less impressive than like a Kansas that might end up with 6 or 7 losses. But wow, look at that schedule. Look at where they've won. Look at how they've won. How do you give it to Wichita over Kansas?
Yeah. I want to clarify one thing. I have nothing against with giving a high seed to somebody that hasn't beat anybody. I'm not against that in principle. But I do think a one seed should be especially reserved for teams that have gone out and with at least some regularity shown that they can beat the best of the best. Wichita State will, you know, even St. Louis and Tennessee are going to be, St. Louis could be a four seed, but they will not have beaten a single protected seed all year long. And I made this argument with Gonzaga last year. I don't think anybody deserves a one seed if they haven't at least beat a protected seed. I just think you have to prove that you can beat the best of the best. And I'm not saying Wichita State can't, but if we're theoretically treating one seed as the top four teams in the country, I think Wichita State, in order to be in that classification, has to prove it against somebody, and they haven't done that. It's not all their fault, but they haven't done it, and I don't think they deserve a one seed if they don't.
Yeah, no, I think those are fair points, and I thought it would be a good one to ask, and obviously there's a lot of passion on this topic, and I think it's interesting. I think there's a lot of teams out there from a, you know, if you really look at the seedings and where teams are going to end up, there's a lot of teams that if the committee is really serious about comparing, you know, comparing road records, comparing the quality of victories against top competition, there's going to be some teams that are way off of where people think they're going to be seed-wise. You know, I mean, we've talked about Duke. I mean, Duke had a nice win this week against Virginia. But basically, they've done all their work at home, except for the UCLA neutral site victory. They're 3-4 on the road. That's a team that's going to struggle, I think, to get a high seed. And,
Duke
and I
is
think,
3-4. How many true road wins do they have? Not counting Elon. Elon is not a true road win, even though their profile says it is.
Isn't it Elon instead of Elon? It's Elon, right?
Elon.
They have 0 true road wins.
They have outstanding.
Yes, they're neutral site wins against UCLA, Elon, and Alabama. So there you have it.
Swinging for the fences.
Yes.
I just had a random thought. How fitting would it be if the West Region 1 and 2 seeds are Wichita State and Pittsburgh?
Well, that would be true, particularly if we could wedge Gonzaga in there somehow. That would be the greatest, the most poetically justified regional I think we've ever had. I don't think it'll happen because I really don't know what to expect out of the committee. There's a lot of wild cards because there's just so few wins right now on the books for some of these
Actually,
teams.
Actually, you're right about that. Arizona will be the one seed in the West, so Wichita State would probably be in the Midwest.
Yeah. Some other items to talk about here real quick. Let's talk about a couple of teams that shot themselves in the foot a bit from where they were last week. Wisconsin last week I had as one of my one seeds. I think they were the second overall seed in my S-curve. They, of course, they go out and they lose a couple of games. They lose at Indiana, which that was shocking. And then they lost
it. Rooting season since 2001.
It's really remarkable stuff. But then, of course, Wisconsin also loses at home to Michigan. And so now you got a Wisconsin team that's still, you know, very highly ranked. But and they've lost 2 in a row. They're still 3-2 in conference. They've still beaten Iowa. How badly did they hurt themselves with the week that they had, Kyle, from a seeding perspective?
From seeding perspective, not too much. I mean, maybe right now you bump them down to a 2 seed. But they've got so many decent wins. I think they could stomach a couple of these losses, and I think they can lose a couple more times and still be in really good shape. The bigger issue, though, is not from a seeding perspective. It's that their defense is MIA suddenly.
Yeah.
You know, they still look good offensively, but the last few games they have defended very, very poorly, and I think that's a bigger sign of troubles to come. more than the seeding. Like I said, I think they've got some wiggle room because of all the good wins that they've got, and I think that they can withstand some more losses, but their defense is missing in action.
And that's surprising. Another, I mean, wow.
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, I mean, this is it's one of those things where, you know, the Bo Ryan system, he does a good job of, I think, you know, making small tweaks and fitting it to his personnel. And, you know, the defense, while it's gone missing the last couple of games, overall they've still had a very good defensive season. I mean, they're 33rd in the nation in adjusted defensive efficiency. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in these two road games they've got coming up this week. They've got Minnesota on Wednesday, and they've got Purdue on Saturday. And, you know, I think if even they could even lose at Minnesota, but I think, you know, what's going to be more interesting is how do they play defensively. And that's, I don't know. I'm curious to see how they bounce back from what was an unexpectedly difficult week for them. Now, David, another team that has struggled a bit, in fact, a team that's lost three in a row after hitting some rather lofty heights, is Iowa State. Iowa State, of course, you know, they beat Iowa earlier this year, and they beat Michigan, and then they hit Big 12 play. They beat Baylor at home handily, but then they turn around, they lose at Oklahoma, they lose at home versus Kansas, they lose at Texas. None of those losses individually are really problematic, but you look at their schedule, they got to play Kansas State a week from now, and then they play Kansas again the following week, then they've got Oklahoma, then they've got Oklahoma State. They got a murderer's row here these next four games, and you know, a team that I was legitimately considering for a one seed last week, suddenly I'm wondering if they're even a three.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't think that they're a one. I had them on the three line going into this week. I don't think they'll even end up there. The thing is, like, the Big 12 is a murderer's row. I mean, it's got, obviously, it's bottom, like Texas Tech, although they just had a nice win against Baylor, and TCU and the like. But, yeah, I mean, they are playing top 25, like you're talking five lines and higher, for half of their league games.
Yeah.
And, you know, this week they lost all of them. I mean, Texas isn't a five-line or higher team, but it isn't easy to go in there and win, and they didn't. I think because, I mean, you can't really fault a team for losing at Kansas. I mean, everyone loses at Kansas.
Well, they lost at home, but okay.
Well, yeah, that game was at Kansas.
No,
it was in Ames.
It was in Ames.
Oh, okay, I thought we were talking about Oklahoma State for a second. Okay, yeah, that game was at home. We need to erase that, too.
I think we need to shut David Griggs down for a while.
I need a reboot over here. I had them up, but I don't know. Yeah, I had them on the three line. They did lose at home to Kansas. I meant to say when they go to Kansas, you can't fault them for losing that game.
Assuming they lose that game.
That's what I meant.
I will say one thing. This isn't about Iowa State, although, you know, I'm not going to jump off any bridges for Iowa State.
No.
Just like I'm trying not to jump off bridges for Ohio State either for their three-game losing streak. But I will say this. I think this Kansas team, I tell you what, they are playing some scary good basketball now. They are. Yeah. I think by the end of the season, they're going to end up. I actually think they're going to end up a one seed because
I do as well. I do as well.
Because of the combination of their schedule and the way they're playing, I think they're going to end up a one.
I have them as a one right now. I do. My one seeds are Syracuse, Michigan State, Arizona, and Kansas. And
I have them as a five. I have them fifth on my seed list, so they're my highest two.
And here's my reason for this. So I look at the wins and I'm using a new system this year, and I classify good wins, any win against the top 50 at home, any win against the top 100 in a road and neutral environment, and then bad losses are the inverse of that. So Kansas has the most of anybody in the country right now. They're the most good wins. They have the neutral court wins against Duke and Wake. They have home wins against New Mexico, Georgetown, Kansas State, and Oklahoma State, and they have road wins against Oklahoma and Iowa State. That's a hell of an accomplishment. And you know, you measure that up against the other teams that are in contention for one seeds, and I'm more impressed by them than I am with anybody else, particularly when you add in that Kansas' strength of schedule is number one overall in the country. I mean, it's a much better schedule than Syracuse. It's a much better schedule than Oklahoma State. It's
yeah.
It's a slightly better schedule than Michigan State, Arizona, and Villanova. So I don't see why you wouldn't have Kansas as a one seed at this point. And you know, I think unless they lose games that they're not supposed to down the stretch, I think they've got the inside track for a one seed.
Well, here's what impresses me. I mean, even setting aside the fact that they look like a really good team right now. They went a whole month from November 22nd to December 21st, 1 month without playing a home game. I mean, that is absolutely incredible in this age of, especially of bye games, where everybody's playing cupcakes at home. That is absolutely impressive to go an entire month of the season without a home game.
I agree.
Grambling does it every year.
Well, that's a little different. So does Southern, for that matter.
Yeah. But,
no, I think Bill Self deserves a huge amount of credit. And, you know, look, if you look at the talent that's on this Kansas team, they're going to be really, really hard to beat. I mean, I think they are the worthy opponent we've been looking for the other top teams that are out there. I mean, and what I find fascinating is, the amount of attention that Calipari gets on a regular basis for – you know, freshmen and young teams. I mean, Bill Self has taken a team that is incredibly young. I mean, you know, Wiggins and Embiid, is it Embiid?
Embiid,
thank you, sorry. And Frank Mason and Wayne Selden. I mean, all of these guys are contributing consistently good minutes for this team. And he's not, you know, you're not talking about a team that's going incredibly deep, but when they're using their bench, they're using it very intelligently. And, you know, it's just, again, I think just an excellent coaching job by Self. And look, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kansas in this Big 12 season, because they've got a very difficult path. They've got Baylor this week. Next week they've got Iowa State and Texas. The week after that they've got Baylor and West Virginia, and then Kansas State again. They've got that big showdown with Oklahoma State on the 1st of March. But the thing is, partially with what you were talking about, Kyle, with them not playing them, you know, any home games for a month, between that and the overall schedule that they've played, they have toughened themselves up, whereas they're going to be the most prepared of any of these teams going down the stretch in the Big 12 Conference.
Yeah, the thing is, I hate to sound like Fran Fischilla or Jimmy Dykes right now, because they emphasize this way too much. But you watch Embiid from game to game, and I mean, there is a reason this guy is going to be the number one pick. I mean, he just from where he is at now, from where he was at the start of November, I mean, this guy is improving at a pace I have never seen. I don't think I've ever seen a freshman improve at the rate he's improving. And their defense might not be number one caliber defense. But their offense, at the rate it's improving, they're going to be scary down the stretch. Yeah. And like you said, they've been into these environments. They're not going to back off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show. I mean, they're the most road-tested team in the country. And I mean, they went in the Ames and won. I am the knower of all things. Just check my thing. But, they went into Iowa State and won. The game was at Iowa State.
And, you know, it's funny to me because this kid, you know, if you look at the defense for Kansas from an efficiency standpoint, they're right around the median in the top 10. I mean, you know, right now Arizona's got the best overall defense of that top echelon. Ohio State technically is slightly better than Arizona, but you know, it's Arizona, Villanova, Ohio State, but the rest of the teams in the top 10 right now, at least in the Pomeroys, are all right there. I mean, Kansas's defense is not really distinguishable from, you know, for instance, Wisconsin or Iowa or Oklahoma State. So I think if you look at what they're doing offensively and you look at the variation of weapons that they have out on the floor at any one time, I really like what I see out of this Kansas team. I'm excited to see what happens with them down the stretch.
Yeah, and as good as their out-of-conference schedule was, I just have one more thought. There is one team out there that they didn't play out of conference that would have been great to see.
Okay.
And that's Missouri.
I thought you were going to say Wichita State.
Well, that would have been great, too, but yeah.
Okay, we get it. Thank you.
He could tie the Wichita State thing in, but he can't go a full hour without mentioning the Missouri thing, so he had to get that in.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, when I set my bracket up from today's S-curve. I this isn't necessarily apropos of the Kansas thing, but I had a bracket that consisted, there was one, the South region had Kansas as the one seed, and then Duke as the four and Kentucky as the five. The NCAA and CBS, I think, would love to just copy that whole cloth and bring that over, just like put that in right now. Probably not going to happen, but anyway. Let's talk about games this week. Some interesting games coming up. On Monday, I'll highlight a couple here for you. Creighton at Villanova. David, am I wrong to say that maybe Creighton isn't that good?
I don't want to call them home court heroes to the degree that Arkansas is, but clearly, like, their most heavy lifting has come at home. It is very hard to go in there and win. I'm not saying it's easy to win at Providence, but if you're as good as Creighton seems to think that they are, you got to go in there and at least not get the crap kicked out of you. I think Nova trashes them. I tend
to agree. I do think, though, that lost in the whole, well, if you're Creighton, you can't lose at Providence. Providence is actually pretty good right now. I had Providence as my first team out in this most recent bracket.
Okay, Creighton thinks they're on. I agree. This is in Big East circles where I like to slum every now and then. Creighton is under the impression that they are as good as Villanova.
Yeah.
And if you're as good as Villanova, you don't get blown out at Providence. And, like, their two best road wins at St. Joe's and, I believe, at Arizona State, those are decent. Those are not Villanova-caliber wins.
I agree.
Yeah. Creighton's offense may be as good as the hype, but they're not going to do anything with a defense rated 89th right now. And they're giving up almost 10 points more per 100 possessions than all of the great teams that we were talking about. That can't happen if they want to be taken seriously.
I agree. Another Monday game, Kyle, Marquette at Georgetown. Loser leaves town?
I think both of them should leave town.
I mean, there's not much to say about this. Both these teams. It's funny. Marquette has no bad losses. They just have too many losses.
This would be a good round of 16 NIT game.
Yeah, that's probably what it's going to end up being at some point. But another one, Kyle. Let me throw this one at you. UNC at Virginia. I don't trust Virginia, and I don't know what to think of North Carolina still. North Carolina, finally did pick up an ACC victory at home against Boston College.
Beware the Hoos, because Virginia's played really well the last four games, and just when you think you got them figured out, they're going to go and do something foolish, and this is the type of game it might happen.
Yeah, and they should have beaten Duke this week. I mean, they should have won that game, and they didn't, and I don't know. David, Baylor, who seems to have just wrapped millstones around their neck and thrown themselves into the water, they got to try to pick things up.
Very interesting strategy there.
I know. They got to go to Kansas. This is not looking good for them.
No. Well, I mean, you get Fog Allen Fieldhouse is a beautiful place, great fans, great atmosphere. I hope they enjoy it.
Yeah. Kyle, last one from Monday. Nebraska hosting Ohio State. Ohio State in a bit of a swoon here. Three losses in a row, all to good teams. Two of them on the road. But you've been high on this Cornhuskers team all season. What are you thinking in this game?
I think Nebraska is going to pull a shocking upset. I think they will get it turned around by the end of the year. I don't think it's going to happen in this game. And coming off, some would say, Ohio State beat Nebraska 31 the first time. They should have nothing to be worried about. That's the exact reason I'd be worried if I'm Ohio State. This is not a good game. You want to rebound from a three-game losing streak when you already beat this team by 31 points, and now you have to play them at home. Two weeks ago. This is not going to be an easy game. I think Nebraska pulls this one out. I really do.
What is it with the Big Ten and the scheduling? I mean, have you noticed this? Like, you've got, like, in Indiana, they got blown up by Michigan State, a week and a half ago. They got to play Michigan State on Tuesday. We got a two-week turnaround on this Nebraska game. It's very odd scheduling in general for this conference this year.
It really is.
That's what happens when you let computers make the schedule for you.
That's what happens when you let Maryland into the conference, but that's next year. Anyway, Tuesday games to talk about. A couple of note: Kansas State at Texas. David, can Kansas State do something away from home for a change?
No.
Okay. I like how this is going, by the way. Missouri at LSU. David.
No.
Okay. right, here's,
they can't win away from home.
Here's one that's closer to your heart, David. Boise State at New Mexico. Can Boise State win one in the Pit?
They can have a lead with less than a minute to go, but no, they will not win in the Pit. They could be leading with 20 seconds to go.
For future reference to our viewers, once Galen says Missouri at, David will answer no.
It's a tried and true thing. Other game of note that might be interesting on Tuesday, actually two games, Clemson at Pitt. I don't like either of these teams. I think it'd be hilarious if Clemson went on the road and won at Pitt. That would throw all the narratives out the window. The other one, Kyle, Purdue, coming off a big road win at Illinois, travels to Northwestern, who suddenly got to be feeling pretty good about themselves. I mean, I mentioned this on CrimsonCast earlier on today, and most of you probably weren't listening to that, but Northwestern went 41 years between wins in Bloomington from 1968 until 2008. And now they've won three out of the last five times they visited Bloomington. This was the first three wins that they've gotten in Assembly Hall came here in the last three seasons. Purdue's not that great. But surprisingly enough, Purdue has picked up three wins in a row now in conference play. Do you think they could make it a fourth against Northwestern?
I'm going to defer. You know, I'm actually going to resist talking about this game other than to say Purdue is playing better basketball, but I'm not going to talk any more about this. I just want to get this in before the show ends.
Go ahead.
WTF, Indiana.
I know.
WTF.
I don't know what to say. I mean, on the Indiana thing, they shot the ball well against Wisconsin. They played well. I don't know. It's bizarre. They scored almost at will against Wisconsin down the stretch and couldn't buy a bucket in the last 5 minutes against Northwestern. And Northwestern, I don't know if you people have watched Northwestern this year. I know you guys have, but I mean the audience out there. This may be the most inartful offensive team I've ever seen. I mean, every shot looks like, you know, it's being taken by 8-year-olds on full-sized rims. Like they just look terrible offensively, and somehow they managed to win in Assembly Hall. I don't get it.
So. Yeah, it's perplexing. Oh, we need to, on that Clemson Pitt game. We need to issue a heavy. Do not operate heavy machinery when watching this game.
Yeah.
Just saying that that could be a snooze fest.
Yeah, no, it's not a good situation. We're gonna wrap things up. Let's talk about the Wednesday games here real quick. The big one, Kyle, Iowa at Michigan. Big clash here. Iowa needs, they need some more road wins. They need more wins, period. I mean, for their gaudy record, they don't have that many great wins to show for it. Michigan has been punching well above their weight this year with the loss of McGarry. I think they've done an excellent job. Who do you like in this one?
I like Iowa. I think Michigan, now, they obviously they get all the credit in the world for going to Madison and beating Wisconsin. But right. Michigan was benefiting a little bit from a 4-2 of this Big Ten schedule, the other four or five games they played. I think Iowa comes in and wins this game.
Okay. David, we've got VCU at Dayton coming up on Wednesday as well. This is a big game for both of these teams. Who do you like?
It's hard to say. I have been underwhelmed with both teams. I thought VCU was a solid 4-caliber seed coming into the year. I still have them in the field, but they're closer to the bubble than I ever thought they would be. I have Dayton right on the bubble. Dayton goes out and loses yet another road game to a non-tournament team. I mean, I don't think they've reached the level of Missouri, but actually I think maybe they have. I mean, awful on the road. And
at least
again,
this one's at home, though, David.
Yeah, but it is at home. Dayton is formidable at home. It's one that both of them really need, but just when I start to say that I like one of these teams, they go out and do something disappointing.
I think you're being a little hard on Dayton. I think Richmond's a fringe bubble team at this point. I mean, they need some wins, obviously. That Dayton win's actually a very good one, but I mean, if Richmond's able to beat UMass this week, if they're able to knock off VCU or St. Louis next week, I think they're right in the thick of the bubble discussion.
You think so?
Yeah, well, I do.
Yeah, if they can do that. And Richmond was another team that I was really big on coming into the year that I'm a little surprised that they've struggled like they have. This VCU-Dayton game, I don't want to call it bubble-licious because I think that that's a little unfair, but it is a game where both teams really need to come in with a huge sense of urgency because it is pivotal for both of them.
Yeah. Well, should be a fun week of college basketball. A lot of games coming up, and you know this is the best time of the year, really, from about the 15th of January till about the 15th of March. It seems like every night there's something going on that you need to pay attention to. So, anyway, guys, great show as always. Really enjoyed it, and thanks to all of you for listening in or watching or whatever you're doing. You can catch us every Sunday night, normally at 9, but we moved back an hour for the NFC Championship game, and hopefully you got a chance to enjoy that. Next week we'll be back. We'll talk more about the tournament teams, the potentials, what we should be expecting out of the S-curve, and who we need to be watching out for. For David Griggs and Kyle Lamb, I'm Galen Clavio. Thanks for joining us here on Hoops HD, the Bracket Racket. We'll be back next week, and stay tuned as we've got Lee Dovecchio joining me here in just 1 second. We'll catch you on the flip side. Welcome back, folks, to a different segment of the podcast. Galen Clavio back with you. We've got Lee Dovecchio, who we haven't heard from in like 2 months. Lee, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I had some time. Mike Stewart ejected me, so I'm just sitting here kind of – I had time to kill, so I figured I would come home. I miss the podcast. I miss all you guys, so I figured I would contribute in some small – aspect.
Well, we really do appreciate that. We always like hearing your thoughts. And now, when he sent you off, did he send you to the wrong locker room? I mean, did you have to go the wrong direction off the floor?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the way Mike Stewart does things. Is, you know, he can't remember which team should go left or right, and he decides that's a grudge he's going to hold against someone else. You know, I'll say this about the UConn-Louisville game last night. First of all, the officiating was horrendous, but Louisville was the better team and was in the midst of putting a very impressive run on UConn when the ejection happened.
The Fran McCaffrey special, kind of.
Yeah, or Bo Ryan. Louisville, very impressive last night, deserved to win, no question. That said, you know, when Jim Calhoun needs to go into the locker room and calm you down for 10 minutes, you're probably like, that's a sign. Because both Ward Manuel, the UConn athletic director, and Jim Calhoun had to go into the locker room to calm down Kevin Ollie. The ejection happened from about maybe 75 feet in front of me. I have never seen Calhoun get ejected in a game in person. And now I've seen Ollie, who's a man of God, Galen. I don't know how he could pick up two technical fouls so fast. It wasn't his first. He only previously had one technical foul that was not administrative. He picked up a technical at DePaul last year. He also got a technical at Seton Hall because they submitted an incorrect lineup to start the game.
Okay.
But yeah, for him to get two technicals and to get them within 10 seconds of each other was absolutely insane. He earned one. It was a horribly missed call. He did earn a technical, but two, The irony is he's been out of the coaching box all year. He was in the coaching box when he got both of them.
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I did not get to see that game, unfortunately. I was otherwise indisposed. But, you know, it's obviously kind of a big deal whenever the coach gets ejected these days. It's just not something that happens that often. And, you know, it's gotten a lot of play on Twitter, just like the McCaffrey one from a couple of weeks ago got a lot of play. I almost feel like we're almost paying too much attention to these things now. Like, they're not really that important in the big scheme of things.
No, they're not. I mean, look, I'll tell you this. Kevin Ollie versus Rick Pitino is already a tough coaching matchup. To go from that to Glenn Miller, a guy who got run out of two Ivy League schools, you know, it was a descent, but it didn't really – I don't think they were much appreciably worse after that. I'll tell you that. When it happened – I was under no, and nobody around me. This didn't feel like, oh, a galvanizing technical. It really felt like, oh, this is not, they're completely spiraling at this point. I mean, Kevin Freeman and a state trooper were required to prevent him from going after TV Teddy Valentine, who wasn't involved with the play, but made sure to not even face him.
Right.
Probably the right move when you think about it, because it doesn't belabor the point. It was just awful. thing to have happen. And what was one of the top three Gamble crowds I've ever seen. UConn now 1-3 though when hosting College Game Day, and the one win was the women's. So
don't want to put that in the media guide. I don't think.
Well, between that and not in the conference next year, having a Tulane and not having a Louisville, probably not going to be hosting College Game Day for a while.
So what's going on right now with the AAC in general? Like, let's take this UConn team to start with, since you have obviously got some expertise there. I mean, you go on the road, you win at Memphis handily, and then
the Memphis game. Oh, sorry, I'll let you finish.
No, I'm just saying. Then 2 days later, you come home and you lose to a Louisville team that really didn't have a good win yet on the season. From looking at those two teams, is Louisville just that much better than Memphis, or what's, I mean, because Louisville, of course, lost to Memphis at home, 2 weeks ago. I'm very confused by what's going on in this conference right now.
Yeah, it's a circular firing squad of four. It's Louisville loses at home to Memphis, which begets Memphis losing at home to UConn, which begets UConn losing at home to Louisville. Cincinnati 6-0. They haven't played any of them yet. I mean, right now, Cincinnati's the best team of any of them. They're probably getting a little underrated. I do think long-term that Louisville's definitely the best team. Just the history's there, obviously, with them. The pedigree's there. They played their second game in a row last night without one of their guards. But they have freshmen come in and play, I thought, very well. He didn't do as much as he did against Houston. Granted, it's Houston. At the same time, it's a Houston team that embarrassed UConn for 20 minutes and ended up getting the win. Terry Rozier, who played 33 minutes. He was 1-for-7 last night. I mean, and here's the problem for UConn. Terry Rozier, the freshman guard, he had 7 rebounds.
Right.
I mean, UConn just got destroyed on the boards, which we know is a problem for them. Last night didn't feel like it would be a game where it would be as much of a factor as, like, the Stanford game worried you, or the Maryland game worried you at the time, obviously, or the Memphis game with Shaq Goodwin. Of course, they shut down Shaq Goodwin on Thursday, and 48 hours later they can't catch a rebound to save their lives against Louisville. So the conference as a whole is very interesting, because the top four teams seem to be – I mean, weird results are happening. We haven't really gotten to see Cincinnati thrown into the mix here yet with those other three that will be coming up pretty soon. But, you know, I would rank it right now. I think it's Louisville, then Cincinnati, then UConn, then Memphis.
I could
see any of the four winning on any of the four's home courts, except for UConn at Louisville, because they've played 3 games at the Yum Center and lost them by an average of 17,000 points.
Right.
Iowa State tournament game in 2012 with Royce White, and their 2 trips against Louisville have been bad. Louisville's got UConn's number right now. They've won 7 of 8. The only time UConn's won in that group was the 2011 Big East title game, and they blew a lead in the second half and needed OT and gave up a shot that would have lost the game at the buzzer, which got lost in the euphoria of winning 5 games in 5 days, but it was a terrible piece of coaching.
What?
But they're owned right now by Louisville, and credit to them. They've played great.
What are we supposed to make of SMU? I mean, they're 13-4. They're 3-2 in the conference. They beat UConn. But their next best win is a road win against Wyoming, which really isn't that good. They've got to play Memphis twice. They've got to play Louisville once more, and they get them at home. They've got to play Cincinnati still twice, I think. No, I'm sorry, they played Cincinnati once on the road already. What do they have to do to get into the tournament at this stage? Because they're really the last team that has a chance out of that conference.
Yeah, well, for one thing, they really have an interesting thing going on right now. They played yesterday. They won at UCF. Today they host Hofstra.
Yes.
And the reason they're doing that is that was a game postponed from December 7th. And I'll be really interested to see what the hell, I mean, SMU's got left after that game. But right now, I mean, I'm impressed with them. They played well at Louisville. They only lost by 8. They hung around with them. Cincinnati did a better job of playing them than UConn or Louisville did, if you want to try and judge from there. The 3-point loss at Virginia is looking better and better as time goes on. The loss at Arkansas doesn't look as bad, considering what happened to Kentucky there, and Arkansas is usually a pretty good home team anyway. I think SMU, you know, if they just hold serve, if they get, I mean, a home win against Cincinnati, I think if they get a home win against Cincinnati, don't lose to any of the teams they shouldn't lose to the rest of the way. And the last game of the year, the last day of the year, they're at Memphis in a noon tip-off. If they beat Cincinnati, or Memphis at home. Heck, if they beat both, I think they're probably going to get in.
Well,
I've been impressed with them so far. The talent is there, the coaching is there. They're not overhyped. They're plodding along. They're getting the results they need to get. They're not, you know, they don't have that signature. I mean, they have the UConn win. That's their signature win right now. But they have opportunities coming up in a 1 week span to start February. They host Memphis, Temple, and Cincinnati.
Right.
I mean, the SMU thing to do would be to beat Memphis and Cincinnati and lose to Temple.
Right.
Temple's awful. But they're the only other team, Galen, that's got a shot at maybe any postseason tournament.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with SMU, they really don't have a signature loss. I mean, their losses are all pretty respectable at this stage. Three away losses and then a neutral court loss to Virginia. So, yeah, they've done nothing to hurt themselves so far. I'm just curious, I mean, if you go through all of the triple-digit Pomeroy-ranked teams remaining on their schedule, I think there's 9 of them remaining, including the yes. game today.
And 8 are in conference.
And eight are in conference. So they win all of those. That's 22 wins. And, you know, I don't know that by itself would be enough. I really think they've got to get at least a couple more wins against the top four.
I mean, if you want to look at it, I just happen to have the BPI page up. Their worst performance this year, the Arkansas game, their BPI was 59.
Right.
Which for a worst performance is pretty good. So they've played well. They've been lucky in the sense that they played 3 games where the opponent was down a bunch of players, and 2 of them were against TCU and Texas A&M, who aren't good, but you know their names. So yeah. I mean, them the rest of the way though, they have a really good shot to get in, Galen, and I've been impressed with them. And hey, any team that can go out and win at Wyoming, I mean, you know me, nobody plays higher than the Wyoming Cowboys. That is a tough place to play, and they played excellent in that game. I really think they're going to get in the tournament. I mean, they have so many chances to step on a landmine the rest of the way.
Yeah.
But what I've seen with them, I'd be surprised. They're going to lose one of those games. I mean, I don't think they're running off a 25-5 season. But, you know, as long as they limit the damage, it would be in their best interest to, I don't know, if it's at Houston, which is upcoming, or home against Rutgers, as opposed to, now, their last 4 to end the year for SMU, at UConn, versus UCF, versus Louisville at Memphis. That's pretty tough.
Yeah.
But if they can limit the damage, I really think they're getting in.
Let's jump coasts and head over to the Pac-12. This is – I don't know what to make of a lot of this conference. Let's start in the middle. Last night, Stanford and Washington. Now, Washington, who pretty much everybody left for dead, started off the conference play pretty well. They started off 3-1. They beat Colorado handily. Granted, that was after the injury. They beat Utah. They won at Arizona State, which I don't think people were really expecting. But then they turn around and they lost their Bay Area swing. They lost to Cal on Wednesday, and then they lose to Stanford last night. Now, I don't think Washington's in the discussion, but I do think Stanford is. Mm-hmm. Stanford's now 3-2 overall. They've got wins at UConn, at Oregon. The road loss at Oregon State is bad, but it's not atrociously bad.
Well,
I mean, it's acceptable at least.
All right, fair.
But Stanford now, I mean, this is a 12-5 team. They're fairly well regarded. They're 46th in the Pomeroy. They're 40th in the BPI. And you look at them and you say to yourself, you know, if they, again, kind of similar to SMU, if they win the games that they need to the rest of the way and maybe pick up one or 2 victories against that upper echelon of the Pac-12. I mean, this isn't just a team that's probably solidly in. It's probably a team that's maybe getting up in the 8-9 seed range.
Yeah, I think they could be a single digit seed. I think they're getting a little flying under the radar this season because the only real, I mean, they got attention for the UConn win, but you know, most people if you mention Stanford, they will remember giving up 112 to BYU. Well, that BYU team's not that bad, and you know, that was also November 11th. And if you look at them the rest of the way, they have a close loss to Michigan,
right?
Which isn't, you know, if they had the Michigan game, they would really be in much better shape, I think. But
yeah.
They got blown out by Pitt. That doesn't look as bad in retrospect. And they have a pretty big week coming up. They have the Southern California swing with UCLA and USC. I think UCLA is overrated at this point, and I think Stanford's getting underrated in the Pac-12. And I think because we've had so many interesting storylines in this conference in terms of Colorado and then Colorado with the injury. And then what do we make of Oregon? Obviously Arizona, the best team in the country right now, the rise of UCLA, people rubbernecking USC at this point. The Parker, all the things going on in this conference, nobody's talking about Stanford.
Yeah.
They're just like SMU. They've been getting their taking care of business for the most part, and getting things done. Washington, you mentioned, I mean, they're not a tournament team, and things like getting demolished at Cal are why.
Yeah.
And the talent is there, and they show flashes, but then they do things like barely holding on to beat Hartford at home. Things like, I mean, they almost win at San Diego State. They play well at Arizona, you know, and then they lose to UC Irvine at home by 14. I mean, I can't figure them out.
What do you make of Utah? 14-4 now. They beat UCLA. They ended up only winning by 5 yesterday. They were up by far more than that earlier on in the game. You know, they had the home win earlier this year against BYU, which looks less impressive every week. But then they lost both road games in Washington, which you just shouldn't do if you're serious about making the NCAA tournament.
Difficult to do. I give them credit.
Yeah, exactly. Now they're 3-3 in conference with that UCLA win, but they have 3 games on the road here in a row. The Arizona games, and then they have to travel to Colorado. They're underdogs in all of them. If they win, how many of those do they have to win to put them back into contention for the tournament at this stage?
I think only, if it's only the Arizona State game, if they lose at Arizona and at Colorado, I don't think that gets them out. I guess Colorado now without Dinwiddie, maybe you say that's a game they should win. And it's a game that I want to see them win if they want to really solidify things. But I think this Utah team, they're the West Coast Pitt, you know, they didn't really play anybody at all out of conference. I mean, at all. So we didn't know what to make of them when they were 11-1. Then they had I don't even know how they lost the Oregon game, having watched it. They had that game. They should have won that game. They have no one to blame but themselves. I mean, they were within 4 points at one point of being 13-0. I'm sorry, 14-0, really. And then the Washington trip happens. I actually like this Utah team. I don't know what their ceiling is, but I think that they – I mean, Gail, look around. Where are we going to find – we say it every year, but this year – we got to find 34 at-larges? I mean, they're in the 34 right now. I don't think they're that good, they're great. I don't think they're a ranked team. I put them towards the bottom end, maybe first 4, but they're in. They've got the UCLA win. I thought UCLA's overrated, but they've got that win. They need to get, I really think for them to feel comfortable though, they've got to get either Arizona or Colorado at home at least. And obviously, if they get Arizona, they'll feel pretty freaking comfortable. But Colorado, at least get one of these Colorado games. You've got a chance to take advantage of Colorado down their best player. And you can't get swept by Washington teams at home. That's also a suggestion.
I don't think they're in right now. I haven't updated everything for recently here. I did an S-curve last week and tried to pick things, but I didn't have UCLA or Arizona State or Stanford in, and I would put all of them right now in ahead of Utah. Now,
that's fair.
As of right now, I would probably have UCLA in barely. I wouldn't have the other 3 in. There have been some changes. My last 4 in last week were Clemson, Arkansas, SMU, and Illinois. Illinois is no longer in the field, but that's only one spot.
Clemson.
Clemson's one win against Duke is better than any of the wins that Utah, UCLA, Stanford, Arizona State have. I mean, I think that's at that point, that's the only real dividing line.
I mean, Arizona State lost to Washington and Miami.
Yes.
What
I don't get is where does the love for UCLA come from? In the BPI, they're 20th in the BPI. How?
I don't know. It feels like one of the back in the day when the Mountain West teams were kind of when they were like right up front about rigging the RPI. It feels like I'm pulling up UCLA's schedule. It's funny because as many Big West teams as they play, they always have a few decent major conference teams because everyone's willing to go to LA.
They only played 4 truly terrible teams in their non-conference. You know,
this is what I don't get. They lost by 9 at Missouri. They got killed by Duke. They lost by 4 to Arizona, and they lost by 4 to Utah. I mean, those are the 4 toughest games they had, I think, if taking a look here.
Yeah.
They lost all of them. Now, I'm guessing that the Arizona game really helps them in any metric because they they played. I was very impressed with them in that game.
As was I.
Pulling it up, their team score in that game was only 84, and it's 0 to 100. So it's not like they played off the charts. Heck, when they went to Arizona State, they played they had a 97-2 in the Colorado game. They were a 98-7, which is the same, pretty much the same score UConn had at Memphis. If you want to know what's a near perfect performance, that was pretty much it. And of course, that was a Colorado team that was missing Dinwiddie, so it's adjusted down because he wasn't in the game. So they played even better than that. I don't get the UCLA love, Galen. I'm with you. I wonder how much of it is the product of we couldn't stop talking about UCLA and USC in the preseason with the coaches screaming at each other. Their first game, I mean, UCLA embarrassed USC. It was 107-73. It's that's one that sticks in the craw for a while. But right now, you know, they've got this week a chance to really recover from the Utah game. They've got home games against Stanford and Cal before they make the Oregon trip.
You know what? I'd never even realized the game.
These two games.
I never even realized that game BPI thing was there, and I was just looking up Indiana. Believe it or not, the loss to Northwestern yesterday was not their worst game of the season, according to this.
Which was?
The worst one for them was the LIU Brooklyn game that they won at the beginning of the season. So there you have it.
They were pretty brutal in that game.
I was there. That was a really bad one. Anyway,
remember, Gail, the Indiana fans think LIU could be a sleeper team in the NBA.
That's right. I forgot about that. Well, how is LIU doing right now?
Galen, you won't believe this. I haven't checked. I'm pulling them up right now.
I got it here.
LIU Brooklyn.
They are 304th in the KenPom ratings.
They got a big win yesterday. Of course, it was against Central Connecticut. They're 1-3 in the NEC. They're at Bryan on Thursday. That's a big test for them. A win there would get them to 2-3 in the NEC. And 7-11 over. They're not good, is basically what I'm getting at. Their wins are St. Peter's, who owns New Jersey, Norfolk State by 2, NJIT 96-93, Lamar, Texas State, and Central Connecticut. And they lost by 1 at Assembly Hall.
Anyway, let's jump over to a different topic altogether, because I've got to do a long Crimson Cast here in about an hour, and I need to save my fire, I think, a little bit for that.
Great. I need to watch you do that podcast.
But let's talk about something that you and I were discussing on text last night. Right now we've got a situation where you have an undefeated team ranked fifth in the country who is definitely going to be favored in every game they play the rest of the season. We're talking about Wichita State. Now, Wichita State, despite their high ranking in the AP poll, they're 10th in the KenPoms. I think they're 14th or 15th in the BPI. All the power metrics seem to indicate that this is not a one seed or really even a two seed caliber team, and I don't see much of that changing unless they just start beating everybody by 30 in the Missouri Valley. How do you see this playing out seed-wise? Let's just hypothetically say Wichita State goes undefeated the rest of the way, wins the Missouri Valley tournament, and so they're sitting there, and I don't know what they would be at that point, 31-0 or something like that. Selection Sunday, where are they seeded and why?
If they're 31-0, I really think they're going to get a one seed. I think the committee has tended to in the past – when a team is at that kind of level, I know Murray State with the one loss got a 6, but it's a team from a conference. I mean, a bigger conference that's still a mid-major, an A-10 team, you know, a West Coast conference team, Gonzaga. After Gonzaga got that low seed and lost their first game after complaining about it, they've seeded Gonzaga pretty high. I really think they will get a one seed if they're 31-0. I mean, look, St. Joe's, they got obliterated by Xavier in the A-10 tournament, still got one. Now that A-10 is stronger than this Missouri Valley Conference is. I'm rooting for Wichita State. I hope they get it. I mean, they were in the Final Four last year, and they had Louisville, you know, at backs against the wall. They really, I would argue, really should have won that game. So I think they're a legit team. I understand the limitations with their schedule. It's not what you'd like to see from a team that's undefeated, I acknowledge that. The Missouri Valley Conference is terrible. They're
going to
be favored by 50. Galen, they could win every game remaining by 30. I also think there's a game remaining on the road where they'll be, you know, down four with eight to play, and the internet will be a buzz, and then they'll pull it out somehow. They did it at Missouri State already. I believe in this team, and I'd be okay with giving them a one seed. I'd have to see who doesn't get one. And the thing I told you, Galen, a reminder, folks, if they're a one seed or if they're the top two seed, it doesn't matter. All it changes is what color jersey they wear in an Elite Eight game if they play the one seed.
Right.
So do I think they're they would deserve one of the top five slots on the S curve? Yes. If it's a one or the number one, two, I don't care. I think it doesn't matter. It really does not matter. And you know, the media will go nuts about it, which will be hysterical because it's literally meaningless. Like, maybe they really want to see Wichita State in the black jerseys. I don't know. I think they'd get a one seed and I'd be okay with it. But, you know, it's a tough argument to make when they don't have a signature win.
Yeah, that ends up being, I think, the big issue. I mean, you know, if you look at their schedule, it's interesting because I think their overall strength of schedule is going to be better than Murray State's was back in, 2011? 2012. But the non-conference is worse. And, you know, winning at St. Louis is a good thing, and winning versus Tennessee is an okay thing, and that's about it. But, you know, I think if they've got no losses, I think they'll automatically be a one seed. Right? That's just that's the sort of thing that makes the committee, you know, the committee loves rewarding stuff like that, even when it doesn't necessarily jibe with the relative strength compared to other teams. I think with one loss, I don't know, how much do you think that drops them down?
I mean, it would depend what the one loss is. It really would. I hate to give that answer.
But no. It makes sense.
I think it drops them. It could drop them to a four or five if it's someone in the regular season. I mean it could be a pretty bad loss.
They have at Indiana State and at Northern Iowa back to back in early February. So if it's one of those are respectable losses.
Yeah, those would drop them to a two or a three in a best case scenario. I mean, if we're talking about them losing any of the other games, they could fall down to four or five. In terms of with them, it's also here. I really can't justify it because it's like I think they could beat a good team if they got a chance to play them. But yeah, it's disappointing that they, I mean, it's not like they, I wonder if off the Final Four, it must've been tougher for them to schedule because, you know, if you're a major conference team, now you're terrified of a loss to begin with because it's a mid-major, but when it's one that went to the Final Four, I'm guessing nobody wanted to play them. So I gotta be give them almost a little consideration there. The thing that will help them is besides the record, Galen, and we know the committee loves the RPI, as awful as it is, and dare I use the term resurgent, DePaul, but the Big East is a good RPI conference. It's not a very good conference, but it's a good RPI conference because everyone beats up on everybody. So that will help them. Tennessee and Alabama being in the SEC, their RPIs are going to go up. They've beaten both those teams. That's going to help their metric a little bit, and I think that's going to inflate their numbers just as much as going 31-0 when your toughest game is Tennessee or Alabama on the road.
Let's finish up by talking about the Big East here. So someone, I think it was Dan Wolken on Twitter, was like, you know, it would be shocking, but the Big East might only get three teams into the tournament this year. A, I don't think that's shocking. But B, do you see anybody else with the potential right now of getting into the tournament? I mean, obviously Villanova, Creighton, and Xavier, they look like they're in pretty good shape. I mean, when Providence is your fourth-rated team in the conference, you got some real issues.
In fairness to Dan, the statement is shocking historically. This year, it's not at all shocking. It's completely realistic. I don't think by the way, St. John's, you know, all that Steve Lavin talent's really paying off there. It's great job. I know the media loves Steve Lavin, but, you know who loves Steve Lavin more than the media? Every other coach in the Big East.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They are not good.
No, they are really, like, given their power profile, they're 71st in Pomeroy, they're 0-5 in their conference. That may be the worst ratio of power to overall record that we've seen at this point.
Yeah, they're 0-5 in a three-bid conference. They're basically George Mason. You know, I mean, it's not good. Butler, I mean, welcome to not playing in the Horizon. This is a bad Big East, and they're struggling like this.
Although, you give them a little bit of credit. They've played what, 1, 2, 3, 4 overtimes, 5 overtime periods, and they finally got one against Marquette. But they've been pretty close against the teams that they played.
Yeah, so, you mentioned Marquette. They're very disappointing. I mean, you could make an argument, Galen, that the most disappointing team in the country discussion, it's coming out of this conference alone.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgetown, yeah, they only lost Otto Porter. That's a huge loss. But, I mean, they are a shell of what they used to be. They're not even going to get the chance to lose to a 12 seed this year, or a 14 or a 15.
Well, I mean, it's funny with both Marquette and Georgetown. I mean, look at Marquette. They don't have a bad loss on their schedule. They just have way too many losses. And
yeah, they play – their schedule's tougher than they got – and they're getting credit for, but it just they're just stuck. They don't see, they're actually going to be able to get momentum in their Big East schedule. That's how bad the Big East is this year, just because they played so many tough teams. But I mean, you look at Georgetown; they needed OT to win at Butler.
Yeah.
Which I mean, people were trying to say that's the boost they need. They shouldn't need OT to win at Butler, right, if they want to be a tournament team. Outside of that, if not for that, they would have lost 4 straight. They got obliterated at Providence. They got obliterated at Xavier. They got outscored 41-22 in the second half against Seton freaking Hall. I mean, Galen, DePaul is not one of the 3 worst teams in this conference. I don't know how it happened, but Butler, St. John's, and Seton Hall are all worse.
What we're witnessing is the miracle of Oliver Purnell. You realize that, right?
But, I mean, I think Villanova is definitely a tournament team. I mean,
Are they a one seed at this point?
That's what I was going to say. They might be. Right now, I don't know about them long term because I've got just some questions about their style being able to hold up. But with the way the
Big East,
I mean, they could be entering the tournament at, I'm trying to do some math, which is always dangerous, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 remaining regular season games. They could enter the Big East tournament at 28-1. I mean, that's a one seed probably.
Yeah.
Even if they have a loss at Creighton, which will be a very tough game. Creighton, you know, they're a tournament team, but outside of Villanova, Creighton, I mean, Xavier has impressed to be a tournament team. The Big East is lucky to have 3 teams at this point.
Yeah.
And we mentioned Creighton and Galen. There are things if you want to be a serious seed line tournament team that you can't do. And one of them is getting demolished at the Dunkin' Donuts Center.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, you look at this Creighton team and that gaudy offensive profile that they have is really impressive. But, for a team that wants to be a protected seed, you cannot play defense as poorly as they are playing defense. You just can't. You can't do it.
It's tough to give up that many points to a team that's in the bottom 50 in the country in shooting.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. For Providence to get 81 points, folks, it's like them like anyone else getting 100. It's just – I'll say this for Ed Cooley. I'm really impressed with the way their last 3 games have gone. They blew out Georgetown. They nipped St. John's by 1 in 2 OTs on the road, and the Creighton performance. I mean, Providence, with all the losses, predictably would be my argument, but all the losses they've suffered in personnel, you know, it was been easy for this team to just go, well, this is another lost year. But they've really shown a lot of fight in their last 3 games. I give them credit. They're not anywhere near the NCAA tournament, but I've been impressed with Providence. And they are a homeless man's North Carolina.
Right.
You just don't know what team you're going to get. You could get the team that loses at home against Seton Hall, or you could get the team that blows out Creighton. You just don't know what you're going to get with them, and I think that makes them the scariest man in the room in the Big East. And the rest of the way, I mean, the only ranked team they play, they host Villanova February 18th. That could be a landmine for the Wildcats. And then they close the season hosting Creighton on March 8th. But I've been impressed with Providence to actually even be a factor in the Big East. But it's also pretty indicative that this is not a major conference. No. This is not 1987.
Nope.
It's not very good right now. And it could be very good next year. My issues with them long term have nothing to do with the fact that right now it just isn't very good, and these things happen. But you know, when 4 of your teams in your conference are on losing streaks, and one of the ones with a winning streak is St. John's, you know, you got problems. Actually, that was before yesterday. It's just a very, very strange conference. Nobody wins on the road, and then teams occasionally take these awful home losses, just awful, awful home losses. I'm waiting for Creighton to lose to DePaul at home.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I could see that would have the media going, oh, my God. What? And I would be, no, that fits. Look at the rest of the conference. So, February 7th, DePaul's going to win at Creighton. That's my wild prediction.
Well, should be some interesting stuff coming up here, and I think there's going to be a lot of really shocked people who haven't been paying close attention to what's been going on in the Big East and in some of these other conferences when Selection Sunday comes around.
Well, the irony is they'll be shocked because they weren't paying attention. Well, you weren't paying attention.
Right.
There's reason. It's because you don't have any good teams in it. And Galen, they, by the way, been bombarded with emails based on my history from the Big East about tickets. The fact that tickets are available for this tournament is surprising enough, considering it sold out dating back to 01 in full. But the entire second level of Madison Square Garden is for sale.
Wow.
Like, entire second level. And it's just really sad. And I know Creighton is sending like 2,000 people. And there's going to be a lot of Creighton fans there. But it's just going to be so strange to see a Big East tournament at the Garden with no juice and without – I mean – I hope they get a Creighton Villanova final. Otherwise, I mean,
I think I'll be in New York City for that week, so I might be able to just walk up and get tickets. That's exciting to hear.
They might just pull you in off the street. They might just need filler for the seats like the MAC tournament does.
Oh God. Anyway, Lee Delvecchio joining us here on the podcast. Thanks. Good chatting with you again.
No, it was good talk. I'm going to go eject myself.
Sounds good.
I'm going to go say like two sentences and get ejected for the last 20 minutes of a critical national TV game. Because, Galen, people aren't here to see the players. They're here to see the refs. But I'm not bitter. Not bitter at all.
Not a bit. All right, Lee Delvecchio joining us here on the show. Thanks a bunch. Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll catch you on the flip side.